1-800-530-1060 and let them know how much you're being blessed. Thank you.
Dial 911 and Die, the book police chiefs and politicians don't want you to read, shows there is no legal obligation for the police to protect you. Just ask yourself, if the police aren't obligated to protect my family and I'm disarmed by legislation, what if...
A burglar!
Dial 911 and Die is available from Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. Order it online at jpfo.org.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first, and on satellite to Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Another edition of American Exposé. This is Chris Kerner speaking to you. What is it? It's the 22nd of March, 2005. The mess continues. The directions continue to confuse. The Terry Schiavo situation is very, very confusing, and it should be. It shouldn't be this bad. It shouldn't be this much of a mess. This congressional involvement certainly is. Well, Hegelian in a way, because the federal government is intervening to a certain degree. But it's just a tragedy, an absolute tragedy to have this Terry Schiavo situation. But those that have done the work in exposing it have brought it to the front page of the newspapers, which is major prominence. I'm sure she has no clue that she is so popular with the country. And her plight. And we covered this this afternoon on the Discount Gold and Silver Trading Hour that I did for Melody Cedarstrom. The Terry Schiavo coverage. Also the 2006 Super Bowl, number 40. Diversity is a goal for the game. In other words, more diversified I'm looking for a certain word. Concessionaires, I suppose you could say, more diversified concessionaires including women, especially women. And Dennis put this up there, and I covered it this afternoon. It's highly in your face to Agenda 21. Most people don't have a clue what Agenda 21 is, but when you read about the strengthening of the role of major groups in Agenda 21, and you see here, Chapter 23 is the preamble, Chapter 24 is a global action for women toward sustainable and equitable development. And we see here Detroit Host Committee kicks off vendor program that will recruit special groups. And this is coming from the Detroit Free Press. And it states here, if untold millions of dollars will be spent in Detroit next February during Super Bowl 40 week. The National Football League wants at least some of these dollars to wind up in the hands of minority and women-owned businesses. And, you know, I don't see how this is a bad deal. It's just the question of the whole prospect and implementation of Agenda 21 being implemented without anyone's knowledge. And the changing of consumption patterns and the transfer of technology and the UN system behind it all, that is what I'm upset about. That is what I continually have been upset about all my life. And this is why this afternoon I got heated again, because we don't remember the past. We are not allowed to remember the past. I mean, Korea, Vietnam, 54,000 lost their lives in Korea, 58,000 in Vietnam. UN actions, UN undeclared wars to bring us to the point we are now. Vietnam is a communist country that is totalitarian in its directions and views. Not much freedom left in Vietnam. And certainly, why did we go to Vietnam while communist Cuba is the way it is? Why are we sanctioning communist Cuba when we're actually working with communist China and bringing back slave labor products in this country in sea crate containers, mostly uninspected, to be shown on our shelves at our markets and stores, and mostly Walmarts and Walgreens and Sam's Clubs and things like this, that has put the small person out of business, basically. And the malls, the shopping malls, Quail Springs out here in Oklahoma, a perfect sustainable community where everything is in one location and all the dwellings are around the location. So according to this article by John Gallagher, 2006 Super Bowl 40, diversity a goal for game. The NFL warns that not every firm that signs up for the program will get a contract. In Jacksonville, Florida, where Super Bowl 39 was played in February, preliminary figures show that 125 minority and women-owned business firms got contracts totaling about $2.5 million out of about 350 firms that had registered for the program. What can I say? This is just a slight implementation of Agenda 21 and its dictates and directives at us and on us. I was certainly covering information about the border this afternoon and U.S.-Mexico border as a terrorist risk, and we certainly knew this. We knew this a long time ago, didn't we? We all knew this was going to happen. And that is a sad commentary to have in this late date and time of what's going on today around us. Here we see, according to Fox News, the Bush administration has blocked out almost all the information in hundreds of documents before releasing them to a conservative organization looking into President Clinton's controversial pardons 4 years ago on his last day in office. The only items not deleted from the material are the names of the person who wrote the document and the person it was sent to. The government accountability group Judicial Watch said Friday that it received the Justice Department documents following a court battle that featured a Republican administration fighting to keep secret documents generated by its Democratic predecessor. The Bush White House has argued that releasing pardon-related documents would have a chilling effect on internal discussions leading up to presidential actions on such requests. And Judicial Watch, I'm not sure who they are anymore. They have a president named Tom Fitton, called it an instance of the Bush administration covering up a Clinton administration scandal. And that makes sense. Makes total sense. The group plans to return to court to challenge the deletions, which cover nearly everything that is written on a total of 915 pages. A federal appeals court ruled a year ago in the case that the White House can't claim Justice Department records are covered by a special exemption from the law reserved for presidential communications. Among the 140 people Clinton pardoned on January 20, 2001, was fugitive financier Mark Rich. Rich's wife, a Democratic fundraiser, contributed $450,000 to Clinton's Presidential Library Foundation and more than $100,000 to Hillary Rodham Clinton's U.S. Senate campaign. Oh, my. Rich's name does not appear on any of the 915 pages. The department invoked exemptions under the Freedom of Information Act that allowed deletions for reasons such as documents being part of internal deliberations or containing personal information. So what does that forebode to us? Typical, typical stuff, people. Typical stuff. There is a Larry King Live interview regarding this Terry Schiavo and Michael Schiavo. And apparently, Larry King, Friday night, made a statement, "Do you understand how they feel?" And Michael Schiavo responds by saying, "Yes, I do. But this is not about them, it's about Terry. And I've also said that in court. We didn't know what Terry wanted, but this is what we want." That's a quote by Michael Schiavo. So apparently it wasn't until 7 years after the incident that he suddenly remembered her wishes. Interesting. Back to this immigration situation, or should I use the UN lingo, migration. Dated March 17th. Out of Los Angeles. And this is part of a part three of a five-part series looking at how illegal immigration affects U.S. border security, the criminal, health care, and education systems, as well as the economy. This is from Fox News Channel. Overburdened by uninsured and overwhelmed by illegal immigration, such public health care in Los Angeles is on life support. And listeners, it was that way when I was in California, and I migrated to Oklahoma on July 6th. I left at 8 p.m. on July 4th of 2001. I arrived at 3 p.m. July 6th of 2001. And I noticed that Oklahoma was about 10 years behind California in my thoughts about immigration and migration. This article continues, 60% of the county's uninsured patients are not U.S. citizens. And remember when I've told you about an initiative on a ballot in 1994 that we voted to not allow illegal immigrants health care benefits, and we voted for it. It was called Proposition 187, and it was overwhelmingly passed, and the next day there were no migrants at the health care centers, no migrants at all. However, Judge Mariana Fauser overturned it. Judge Mariana Fauser overturned the ruling of the American people in California and made it mandatory that that ruling, that vote for 187 be overturned. And that's because we are embroiled in a UN system today. The judges think internationally. The Bar Treaty of 1947 engineered this. And that's the sad commentary to have regarding all that's going on. So, dated March 17, 2005, L.A. emergency rooms full of illegal immigrants. Well, under the U.N.'s eyes, under the State Department's eyes, they're migrants under human rights treaties. As I've said many times in the past, President Clinton signed Executive Order 13107, Implementation of Human Rights Treaties, on the 50th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights on December 10, 1998. Meaning, on December 10, 1948, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which Eleanor Roosevelt was a major author of, that document, came into play. So this Executive Order 13107, or 13107, correct, that gave the mandate that all government agencies follow along the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and the Rights of the Child and all the other human rights treaties that the UN has passed, that we've accessed to. So once again, 60% of the county's uninsured patients are not U.S. citizens. More than half are here illegally. About 2 million undocumented aliens in Los Angeles County alone are crowding emergency rooms because they can't afford to see a doctor. According to the State Association of Hospitals, California's public health system is on the brink of collapse. In Los Angeles County, patients can wait 4 days for a hospital bed and up to 2 years for gallbladder surgery. Quote, the hospitals are closing because of the totality of the uninsured, end quote, said Dr. Thomas Garthwaite, director of the Los Angeles County Health Department. Quote, if you're legally a resident in California and you're poor, you have a right to basic services, end quote. Some critics say the taxpayers can't be the HMO to the world. Last year, Los Angeles County spent $340 million to treat the uninsured. That's roughly $1,000 per taxpayer. Sad commentary to have, listeners. Quote, we're citizens here. Why should somebody from another country that's here illegally get anything that we can't get? I mean, that's dumb. That's not right, end quote, said Dong Shinnick, whose son Bill is mentally disabled. And that is the way it is. That is the UN system. That is the leveling of the playing field of the world. Take away what we have, give it to the rest of the world, destroy the middle class here, and actually destroy the middle class all over the world. There is to be no middle class in the UN system. Everyone is to be equal. It is a subtle form of enslavement that is being implemented onus and atus on a daily basis. And don't believe me when I deal with this situation. It's a sad commentary to have. It's sad to know what I know. And this article continues, though the Shenicks are uninsured and considered poor by county standards, his father had to find a way to pay for Bill's care while thousands of others in the county illegally get it for free. Quote, it makes you feel pretty bad when you're born in that country and you're handicapped and you've got a learning disability and you can't get medical help, end quote, Shinnick said. Mike Antonovich, the Los Angeles County supervisor, said the system has been basically bankrupt. Well, duh. The Department of Health has a $1.2 billion deficit. Caring for illegals is siphoning money from other services and forcing clinics, trauma centers, and emergency rooms to close, he said. Quote, we cannot afford to have an open-door policy to encourage illegals to continue to come here and receive all the medical care because it's too expensive, end quote, he said. Immigrants like Yolanda Hernandez, however, argue that if they're were cheap insurance plans available to her community, people would buy them. Quote, Americans have enough money to pay for insurance, end quote, she said. Quote, they make good money and are educated. Unfortunately, we are not, end quote. And I don't know what planet she jumped off on, but there's many Americans who are absolutely destitute and poor. The fourth installment of this series focuses on how border states are dealing with educating Mexican immigrants and the strain it's putting on California's education system. And this comes from Fox News listeners. and it's very revealing, but it's nothing new to me. Very indicative of what I've been experiencing and saying for a long time, but it's part of the UN system, listeners. That is where everyone misses the boat, but the documentation speaks for itself. If anyone has any thoughts, any complaints, any rebutting to what I'm saying, you're welcome to call in at 559-781-3773. 559-781-3773. That would be the logical thing to do. If you're uptight, upset, have any questions, have any thoughts, 559-781-3773 is the number. Also on March 17, 2005, same date, here we see also from Fox News, and this is an earlier part of this series, part two of the five-part series, we just covered part three, how illegal immigration affects U.S. border security, the criminal, health care, and education systems, as well as the economy. Many police officials in states along the U.S.-Mexican border say they are fed up with the number of illegal aliens populating American prisons, many of them incarcerated for violent crimes such as murder, rape, and robbery. Almost one in six inmates in Arizona, for example, is a Mexican citizen. Well, when you have a dumbing down process that's been going on for decades, when you have an elite oligarchy of Mexico in place, when you have a NAFTA that was supposed to benefit the people of Mexico, which never happened, when you have your factories move from the U.S. to Mexico and you decide you don't want to do this anymore, as I've said before, you can't take your factory back. Do you think that's any different in communist China? If we move our factories over to communist China, do you think we're ever going to be able to bring them back? Do you see the insanity of what we live today? The utter insanity of what we live today, listeners. We will not be able to bring any factories back from these communist countries. And Mexico, for all intents and purposes, is a communist country. Absolutely. We have the implementation of 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto here in America. Are we a communist country? We're under democracy, which is socialism. Socialism and communism are tied. And that's the bottom line. We have communitarianism in America. That's the new reinvented communism. Communitarianism. That's why Nikki Rapano's website, the Anti-Communitarian League, is very important to pay attention to. So almost one in six inmates in Arizona are Mexican citizens. Quote, it's a phenomenon that law enforcement recognizes as a major problem, end quote, said one undercover detective who specializes in street gangs and goes by the name of Paco. Quote, we have to put drug users and violators in there, babysit them, and now we have to babysit illegal aliens, end quote, said Maricopa County, Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio, whose jails are 4,500 inmates over capacity. Most Mexicans cross the border looking for work. The competition is fierce for jobs requiring uneducated, unskilled labor. Many illegal immigrants find themselves far from realizing their dreams. And they're not illegal, they're migrants under human rights treaties. That's the problem. Do you suppose if the American people were alerted to the fact that the UN system is so perverse in our country, do you think that would make a big change? It might. That's why they keep it quiet. That's why the 54,000 in Korea that gave their lives need to be remembered on a daily basis. The 58,000 that died in Vietnam on a set-up war need to be remembered on a daily basis. the people of Vietnam, the people of Korea need to be remembered on a daily basis. Many people from Vietnam are here today. We left Vietnam in 1972-73. We left to Henry Kissinger saying there are no more POWs in Vietnam. And Bobby Garwood heard that on the loudspeakers with his fellow POWs in Vietnam, where Henry Kissinger said, no more POWs are in Vietnam. They're all home, which is a bold-faced lie. Henry Kissinger, alive and well in America today, or somewhere around here. And Bobby Garwood, boy, what a thing. What a situation he went through, which I've talked about many times in the past. And I'm not going to interview him again because I don't want him to go through that again. That is a terrible, terrible, terrible thing he went through. And I've got derogatory information about him, which doesn't make any sense at all. When you're a prisoner, you do what you're told. Yeah, Bobby Garwood might have been walking around with a weapon, acting like a guard to demoralize the other POWs just brought in. But you better believe there was not one cartridge in that gun that Bobby Garwood was carrying. He did not collaborate with the enemy because he had nothing to collaborate with the enemy. And those that are trying to vilify Bob Garwood are trying to cover up their actions in the POW camps and trying to scapegoat some innocent individual like Bob Garwood, who found a way to get out to prove there were more. Did it make any difference? He might have engineered the secret returning program if it even worked, if it even existed, the secret returning program. So anyway, we see much going on here, listeners, much happening. And Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is all over the world right now. Apparently she was visiting Japan, South Korea, and Communist China in a high-octane trip that was a combination of promising and maddening moments. On the plus side, Condoleezza Rice publicly lauded Japan's efforts to increase its global power. Japanese leadership in advancing freedom is good for the Pacific community and good for the world, according to the Washington Post. She also had harsh words for the communists and many other Algiers from occupied East Turkestan. It's an independent until the communists brutally conquered it in 1949. Are still languishing in jail. The BBC summarizes the plight of three from Tohi Toleas. Oh, my goodness. Abdelini, Moliamfdeman, and Mohammed Toliti Matarosi. What am I saying here? The fact of the matter is the State Department is well involved in what's going on in the world today, and that is the big problem of all time. Deputy Spokesman Adam Arelli on March 22nd, today, states, quote, Condoleezza Rice was deeply saddened today to learn that a member of the United States Agency for International Development's Disaster Assistance Response Team was shot and wounded early this morning in Darfur. Yes. Once again, you have these situations and circumstances. It is the first time in the history of the Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance Program that one of their officials has been shot from the State Department. The injured U.S. aid official was traveling in a clearly marked humanitarian vehicle in a four-vehicle convoy between Naila and Kos in the West Darfur when she was shot in an apparent ambush by unknown persons. The convoy was traveling on a road that was considered open by the Office of the UN Secretary, the UN Security Coordinator. The wounded individual was received medical treatment, and the U.S. mission in Khartoum is coordinating with the African Union, the UN, and other parts to arrange a medical evacuation as soon as possible. Much more to do and cover. I'll be back shortly. We'll be right back.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, you can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there. Two, you can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. Three, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on firstamendmentradio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at firstamendmentradio.com. Thank you for listening. Who are you? That is the question, and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule pages at firstamendmentradio.com for broadcast times. We'll see you then.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, buddy.
Speak up, my friend.
What you doing?
Radio show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say hello.
Well, hello.
Long time no see.
Yeah. Same old stuff.
Same stuff, different day, more shootings.
Yeah, I haven't even covered that.
Yeah.
Major prominence in the press.
Well, you know, we've you and I have discussed this for months since they've been trying to get that new assault bill passed. Well, it's going to happen, and there's going to be shooting after shooting after shooting until it does.
Yep, it's no surprise to us. No surprise to the country that's awake.
Yeah.
The portion of the country that's wide awake, no surprise. It's just they continue to pull Hegelian scenarios.
You know, so what amazes me most is these local talk radio programs and these people. When the guys do say something about property rights or something like that, the phones just light up with these people. People are mad.
Yes. And frustrated.
Yeah. And I don't know what it would take to organize all these people that are this mad, but you know, you would think we could.
Well,
I have yet to figure it out.
The only trouble is it takes money to organize. And we're all being taxed and burdened, and business and industry's gone, and so, you know, the money's in the hands of the foundations and the government organizations and the high corporate sponsors, you know.
Oh yeah.
And so this is why we can't organize. It's because there's no money to organize.
And get a load of this. Several months ago, a nightclub over in East Austin burned down. It was a very prominent black family owned the place. The police were called there usually 3 to 5 times a night, and they had to put on riot gear to go inside of this club. Well, this club burned down, and the mayor of the Austin City County, the top person of the city council, I can't think of exactly what her title is.
Mm-hmm.
Manager, that's what it is. The city manager wants to give this club $750,000 to rebuild.
Hmm.
A nightclub that the cops had to go to 3 to 5 times a night. You see, when this club caught fire and was burning down, and the police showed up out there, apparently the police in Austin have little computer type things that's in their cars that they can send text messages back and forth, right?
Right.
Somebody sent a message that said, "Burn, baby, burn," over the policeman's...
In other words, let it burn to the ground.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They had to go out there all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, 3 to 5 times a night in riot gear to go stop, you know, drug dealing. And now the city manager wants to give this... And this was a well-to-do black family, and they even had insurance, and the city manager tells them they'll give them $750,000 if they will have live music there so that it can fall under this live music restoration program they supposedly have going on in Austin. But in reality, they're putting all the musicians and nightclubs out of business by passing a smoking ban. It's up for vote just in a few days, as a matter of fact.
Mm.
They're trying to ban all smoking in all buildings in Austin. And Austin being really the music capital of the world now instead of Nashville, there's like 200 clubs that would absolutely go broke. But yet the city manager wants to give this ethnic club on the other side of town $750,000.
Interesting.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe the amount of interesting things that come out of Moscow on the Colorado,
mm-hmm.
better known as Austin, Texas.
Amazing. Right in the young man's backyard.
Incredible.
Yep. Well.
Well, I just wanted to call and say hey, and
I appreciate it.
I apologize for forgetting your birthday. Happy birthday.
Well, thank you, my friend.
Belated.
we don't remember those things after we reach 50, you know.
Yeah, us old farts kind of quit when we turn 50. That's when we quit.
And I do feel sorry for those 20-year-olds, and I'm glad I'm as old as I am.
Well, I am too. I just wish I had the body of those 20-year-olds.
Yeah, well.
So I could start all over again.
Live and learn.
You know what they say about hindsight.
Amen.
Okay, buddy.
Thank you, Tim.
God bless you.
God bless you.
Adios.
Bye-bye now. Certainly this scenario that we live with today is all cattywampus to what a common-sense person would think. Unless you study the UN and Agenda 21, then it all makes sense. Certainly for the State Department to cover the Bush administration has made the economic, political, and social advancement of women an integral part of U.S. foreign policy. The U.S. State Department and the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, help women become full participants in their societies through programs that increase access to education and health care and strengthen their leadership, political, and business skills. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying that this is what it's all about. Feminism was the market direction to start it out. and we live it today. Saluting Women's History Month, and that's what it is this month. Sarah Stryker of the Press and Public Affairs Officer for the Bureau of South Asian Affairs. As spokesperson for the Bureau, she arranges media appearances by the Assistant Secretary of State and other senior Bureau officials. communicates on U.S. foreign policy toward the region and made with the media and coordinates closely with embassy public affairs of officers in the region as well. This is amazing in its totalitarian direction, and certainly Chapter 24, Agenda 21, Global Action for Women Toward Sustainable and Equitable Development. And then we deal with foreign aid yields better results when invested in countries where policies are in place to reduce poverty and promote economic growth. Certainly we understand that. These policies include those related to good governance, investment in health and education, and enabling climate for entrepreneurs. And you can learn more about how the Millennium Challenge Corporation, that's right, the Millennium Challenge Corporation and the U.S. Agency for International Development work to help developing nations. And also visit www.sdp.gov, that's sdp.gov, to learn how the U.S. government has joined with foreign governments, international organizations, non-governmental organizations, academia, and the private sector to plan and implement voluntary partnerships to promote economic growth, social development, and environmental stewardship. Ah, yes. It doesn't stop there either. It moves along ever so incrementally on a daily basis. Here we see Education for Sustainability, a review of Agenda 21, Chapter 36. And one of you good people sent this to me quite a while ago. And this is an essay which was originally submitted as a position paper by the Sierra Youth Coalition, the SYC, to Youth Agenda 2002 in December 2001. The common purpose of these organizations is to incorporate the voice of students in the development of sustainable development policy. As this document demonstrates, the education is one of the most important elements of sustainable development. And we have another caller, Tom in Virginia. Welcome to the broadcast, Tom.
Thank you, Chris. The point I wanted to make was that the way you do talk about Agenda 21, it seems like these days if... the earlier caller brought up the shootings, this Terry Schiavo, the Schiavo case, and say the Austin Tollwood thing, that sort of thing. I live in Virginia, and it just seems like that everything kind of is formulating, because I actually have done research into it myself, and so I do have kind of an understanding. The funny thing is I go to Liberty University. I'm a 32-year-old senior there at Jerry Falwell School, and I'm probably the only one on campus that knows about this stuff.
Uh-huh. It's a secret, isn't it?
Not if you don't want it to be, you know. I mean, if you got there and look, it took us invading Iraq for me to really wake up to everything, and to 9/11, the whole Hegelian dialectic, and that sort of thing, GNAC, and then, you know, reading about the United Nations and just all these other organizations like the Club of Rome and Bilderberg, and just, you know, and just how they all kind of come together, you know, along with, I guess, these mystery religions kind of forming a foundation for it. And it's just amazing just how things go on and how America's duped, and, you know, through, you know, the press and into everything else. And just, you know, even like on one of the radio shows sometimes in the morning, they talk about how the news, like CNN or CBS or Fox, how they got the light blue backing. And, you know, it seems like we're being conditioned every day.
Yeah. It's just like the New York Police Department. They have the same UN blue for their uniforms and cars.
Uh-huh.
In the park, you know, the fire hydrants are UN blue in New York, too.
And then no one questions these things, you know. I mean, I'm not, you know, and I'm, you know, one thing I do look at is about, you know, some stuff is coincidence, I'm sure, you know, but, you know, after a while, you know, like with this Atlanta shooting, you know, it's not necessarily here, you know, various folks in alternative media, you know, they speculate, you know, mind control, you know, MK Ultra or whatever. It very well might not be that, but regardless of what it is, with these shootings, you know, this kid and up in, I think, Wisconsin or wherever, you know,
right.
You know it's coming down the pipe. No, you know exactly they're going to get what they want, all the Barbara Boxers and Brian Feinsteins and even the George Bushes and Arnold Schwarzeneggers are going to get their disarmament program through, which is Agenda 21. All goes back to it, it seems. And it's,
well, the laws are in place to disarm us, and you're right, they have to pull it off. They'll probably pull it off by rationing the food. That's probably the main way they're going to get us to disarm. And it's a sad commentary to have, but when you know so much, and you seem to be doing your research, it doesn't differ from what I feel.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like we're going to come in and bomb Syria, Iran, and whoever else, you know, and we're going to need some other staged crisis. Just like, you know, 9/11, or just, you know, some sort of Reichstag fire.
Well, what, you know, they can pull off another one to get us into the closed military bases that they've set up as concentration camps,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, SEMA. I was watching on Sci-Fi the other night with a friend, and I don't watch TV at all, but every now and then I'll go and tell a friend of mine, and he watches Sci-Fi a lot, and it was a show, and it opens up. It was some sort of nuclear blast or something, but everybody's going to a FEMA camp. And I was, of course, ranting and raving and telling him, you know, he's older, he's 62, doesn't care, doesn't want to hear it. But now I'm still driving the point home. Look, you know, people watching this, they're going to think it's okay to be going to a FEMA camp when something happens. You know, and.
Yeah.
You know, and I do my best. I try to educate people on campus at Liberty, you know, that Bush is what you think he is. He's got loyalties that are not to America, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Lord Jesus Christ as I know him. You know, he's got a much different agenda, and he's a, you know, he's just a puppet. You know, he's just one side of the Hegelian coin other than what Kerry was.
Yeah.
They were for the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and people look at me like I'm crazy, you know, you tell them about Skull and Bones or you point out chemtrails in the skies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
you can see them in the skies and they look at you like you're an idiot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, and I mean, I was at that point too, so I mean, but you know, it's an awakening, a softening of the heart by God, you know, and you know, I guess I'm going to be used for some purpose. It might not necessarily be the funnest thing in the world, the nicest thing in the world. I don't really necessarily like knowing all this stuff, but for some reason I do, and I dig into it, and I try to educate people.
Well, that's all you can do, and that's good that you're doing it. Don't stop. Don't stop what you're doing, Tom.
I don't think I'd be able to sleep at night. And I won't get rich doing it. You know, I'm a psychology. I won't graduate in May with a psychology degree, and
oh, so you'll be a good shrink down the road.
You know, hopefully somehow that'll help me, but, you know, I really want to see people wake up to this stuff, you know, even if it can't be stopped, at least they can, you know, wake up within themselves and at least they know.
Well, make yourself some bumper stickers, stopagenda21.com, and that'll take them right to the source, which is me, and my Agenda 21 section, and it's waking up quite a few people at this point. So we have a blessing in you and what you're doing, and Tim and what he's doing, and others, Sam and Trish, and you know, we do our best, and who knows what the future holds for us. But don't stop what you're doing, Tom.
Yeah, I'm not going to.
Okay, great.
But appreciate you letting me on your show. You said that our website was Stop Agenda 21. Okay, that goes right to your website.
That goes right to my Agenda 21 section. Darren did that.
Okay.
And it's stopagenda21.com.
That's your website on my favorites. So.
That'll work for you college guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Short and sweet.
But, all right, well, I appreciate it. Yeah, have a good evening, Chris.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So we're going to get this up on the website, Education for Sustainability, a review of Agenda 21, Chapter 36. And the preamble is about all we have time for. The phrase and concept of education for sustainable development is mentioned over 600 times throughout Agenda 21. Once again, the phrase and concept of education for sustainable development is mentioned over 600 times throughout Agenda 21. This issue also has an entire chapter dedicated to it. Education is mentioned as a recommended solution for a wide variety of sustainable development challenges, they call them. So why aren't we doing more about this fundamental issue in Canada, they say. This paper was collectively developed by more than 65 students from across Canada during the SYC's most recent Sustainable Campuses Conference held in Halifax in October 2001. The Asira Youth Coalition Sustainable Campuses Network urges the Secretariat to bring this issue to the forefront of the national and international agendas in Canada's preparations for the World Summit on Sustainable Development. The network is comprised of a network of high school, college, and university students working towards sustainability on their campuses. They have been working collectively for 3 years to make their campuses more sustainable by encouraging and working towards increased resource use efficiency, responsible economic and social practices, active student, faculty, and staff engagement on campus, community sustainability issues, and education for sustainability as a product of formal education and of actively living or learning. So this Sierra Youth Coalition, the SYC, is calling for the Canadian Secretariat to the World Summit on Sustainable Development to identify sustainability in education as a priority theme for discussion and action on both the national and international levels. These individuals going to universities and colleges, they're being trained to implement the facets of Agenda 21, and this is the big problem. It's the biggest secret in the world, unless you're in college and high school, being taught sustainable development, smart growth, things like this. And they say education is a very broad and challenging topic, they say. Well, what are they educating people for at this point in time? Education for sustainability is even more nebulous, they say. It can mean everything from formal courses to sustainable development created for delivery at the university level to a more informal community-driven initiative on composting education. Thankfully, they say Chapter 36 of Agenda 21 works to define the concept of education for sustainability more clearly, they say. How can the Canadian government live up to the commitments made in Rio? How can they support the work of other organizations working to increase the knowledge and capacity of Canadians in understanding and truly living sustainably? And we're going to get this up. I'll send this to Dennis, and he'll get this up as soon as possible, because it's most important to see this, listeners. Most important. And this afternoon I was covering the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, which is part of this, a preamble or a precursor to NAFTA, which I was covering this afternoon on the Discount Gold and Silver Trading Hour that I do for Melody Cederstrom. And certainly she's going to be a sponsor on this network if I can work things out. And she'll be back because I didn't want her to feel too discouraged. And so I'm going to work with her on this. But this article is entitled Beyond Free Trade, a Canada-United States Partnership for Security and Prosperity. And it was very, very revealing information. And it was dated February 24th to March 3rd, 2005. So it's only been going on for a little while, and I think that it's very well worth your time to look at if you have time. And, you know, how much time do you have to learn about what's going on around us, people? That's the problem. And it was the text served as a basis for remarks to audiences in Dallas, Tucson, Phoenix, Cleveland, and Buffalo between February 24th and March 3rd. The audiences included the World Affairs Council of Greater Dallas, the Greater Tucson Economic Council, Arizona State University, and the Garvin School of International Management, Thunderbird Phoenix, the Cleveland Council on World Affairs, and the Kansas College in Buffalo. This five-city speaking and consultation tour by Mr. D'Aquino is the first leg of a 10-city initiative in the United States planned for 2005. Mr. D'Aquino chairs the Canadian Council of Chief Executives, the North American Security and Prosperity and Prosperity Initiative launched in 2003. And it goes on. In 1988, Canada and the United States took a leap of faith into a comprehensive free trade agreement. Almost two decades later, the fears of the skeptics have been demolished, they say. But it certainly hasn't been demolished in Mexico. You don't see a lot of Canadians trying to escape into the United States, apparently. But you sure see Mexicans and people from all over the globe trying to get to this country. That has to be for a reason, listeners. You don't see anybody leaving the United States going to China or Cuba, do you? Or Mexico? What would happen if we left to Mexico? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You'd be destitute. And to work in a factory in Mexico, you're still not going to get paid the way you think you're going to get paid, as it was promoted at the onset in 1993. And NAFTA is a part of GATT, which was formed in 1947, like I said before. So this information is highly relevant that someone sent to me, that we got it up on the website. It's most important to see for yourself. And they say that they know that as a leading trading nation, Canada depends for its prosperity on the free flow of goods, services, investment, people, and ideas across national borders. They go on to state that as a result, we also have been tireless advocates in promoting freer trade and investment links globally. Freer trade means the money that we used to get for tariffs goes to the UN system. Free trade isn't free at all. The revenue goes to the UN and the World Trade Organization. That's the difference. Countries used to sustain themselves, and there's that word sustain, or sustainable. Countries used to keep themselves afloat without taxing its citizens by the trade and tariffs. So they go on to state that as a result, they have also been tireless advocates in promoting freer trade and investment links globally through multilateral institutions such as the World Trade Organization, the WTO, regional groups such as the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, APEC, Forum, and the Free Trade Area of the Americas, the Free Trade Area of the Americas Initiative, FTAA. And bilateral initiatives with both governments and our private sector counterparts and major trading partners across Asia, Europe, and the Americas. What are they saying? It's a big UN family. And that's what I have to leave you with tonight, listeners. I'll be back tomorrow night at the same time slot with more of the documented facts that run the world today. God bless you all and good night.